Do not confuse this with treatment or mental health advice or direction. Nothing on this podcast is made to supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your mental health caretakers. Although David Koslowski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a certified mental health professional in this environment. And same applies to any professional who may appear on the OG Therapy Podcast. Welcome to the OG Therapy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of OG Therapy. And today's episode is going to be a little bit of a continuation from our last episode. I think mostly because my producer, Brandon, he says he has a question for a friend, right?
There's no proof that it's not for a friend.
Okay. So we're just going to take his word for it that it's for a friend. And he's just going to relay that information to said friend, but it's not for him at all.
No, can't relate.
So let's jump into it, Brandon, because after we talked last time, you know, we started getting onto a conversation and you were, hey, man, we should talk more about that. And my friend has some questions. So I had Brandon write down some of his friend's questions and thoughts.
Yeah.
And so, let us know what you got, man. What you thinking?
Well, last episode, we kind of ended up bringing up, why do people trust everything they see on their timeline when it comes to social media? Because everything's super short, digestible content. And we were talking about politics-wise, but for me, just the curiosity of, we get fed so much information, and from like the social dilemma, what we've learned about social media, it's curated for what we want to see. So in that, I don't think a lot of people ask the question of, well, why do I believe what I believe when I see it on my timeline? And ask the question of like, is this because it confirms what I'm thinking? It makes me feel good. And more getting into probably later on is when people get information that challenges their views, that uncomfortable feeling, like what you're supposed to do with it and what that is from like a therapist psychological perspective.
Yeah, I like it. So which one of those you want to tackle first?
I would say probably actually the why when people get information that challenges their views, what that uncomfortable feeling is and why people react either negatively or positively to it.
Well, in normal conversations, if someone calls you out or challenges your views, it's going to make you feel some sort of way of like either angry, frustrated, anxious, combative, defensive, whatever it may be. And so it's pretty smart for the technology companies, in my opinion, to, hey, let's just serve them up a la carte. Well, seems like it's a la carte.
Yeah, you're right.
All these different types of things that we know that will be pleasing to them. And then every now and then throw in a few things that will get them upset and frustrated. Now, I think depending upon the person, and just so you know, what Brandon, my producer, was referring to when he said the social dilemma. If you haven't heard of the Social Dilemma movie or documentary on Netflix, go check it out. It's really good. Came out during the pandemic, but it was made like, seemed like they didn't take too long to make it because it was pretty relevant. Whenever they made the movie, so basically we're talking about is on Netflix, there's a documentary that goes over a bunch of tech insiders, meaning people that work for some of the largest tech companies in the world. They started having guilty conscience because the platforms started out with one way that was just supposed to connect people and be a social networking type of a thing. And then it kind of over time, it became a profit thing. It became a marketing arm. It became a way for companies to have more reassurance that if they placed a bet, meaning if they, I'm using bet because that's the terminology they use in it, but they make a bet that they always want to be able, talking about companies that are trying to sell a product. They're always trying to increase the probability that people are going to buy their product from their advertisement. The problem was that they didn't have enough data and information about the people that they were trying to market to and trying to sell that product to. Right. And so by partnering with social media companies were given permission by people. Probably they took more permission than we realized. Buried in the terms and conditions. And so they took that information and they were able to then go back to businesses and say, hey, not only can we tell you what this person is interested in, we can tell you their day-to-day habits. We can tell you their mood. We can tell you what times of the day they're more likely to watch certain content versus other content. And so the way they call it is they said they hired psychologists and they hired really, you know, people that were just really advanced and experts in understanding human behavior and the human mind and the human brain. And their terminology is that they dug way, way deep down in the dam into the brain stem and implanted certain ideas. And then they kind of watched it grow. And as they watched it grow, they could report back to the different companies that wanted to be potential marketers. And they could say, hey, if you want to market to these type of people, we can give you inside information about them, about their habits, their mood, and all their, you know, all the things that they're into and their likes and their dislikes. We can give you that information, but we can also give you information about how long they look at your ad, which can show if they're really interested or not. So it's just a bunch of, you know, testing. They said, all right, run an ad. Then they give them the feedback on the ad. Oh man, a lot of people stopped and looked at this ad for 3-4 seconds. So then they determined a new market strategy was, instead of just having people pay us to place the ad, we should have them pay us to give them feedback on how long people look at the ad. And somehow, I don't know, because I wasn't in any of those marketing meetings, but somehow they were able to get partnerships with companies. And I believe in the, I don't know if it's still the market rate right now, but it was somewhere something like 2 cents for every 3 seconds or a 1.5 cents for every 3 seconds. I'm sure it changes all the time, but they're saying if someone stops and looks at the ad for longer than a certain amount of time, then the company has to pay the Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, that small amount just for the company, the Facebook, Instagram, whatever, to let them know that they're looking at it. And because there's a digital footprint, they can show, hey, here's the analytics, here's what you got going, and here's what we can do. So going back to how they dug deep into the dem cell, I don't know why people say dem cell. I've had a long day of talking to teenagers in high school as a teacher. So my brain's a little fried on the speaking because today's one of the days I spoke like for 3 hours straight. So they dug deep into the brain stem to be able to plant that. So old school marketing was definitely like, hey, we pay a radio station to put up an ad. Then the radio station collects the money. They put up the ad. When the ad's done, we got to pay them again. But there wasn't really any reassurance whether that ad was going to hit with people.
No.
Once they found out how to do this, the sneaky little backdoor thing. In fact, one person on the movie The Social Dilemma, Jared Lanier is his name. He's the guy that invented virtual reality. He had a really quote in there where he said, he goes, the definition of relationships has been manipulated. He said, when you have a social media platform over here in one hand, you have another party over here that's paying them to give them the information, to give them the feedback, to influence you. The very definition of relationship, the very definition of connection that youth and a lot of people are experiencing is manipulation. The only way that person, you, the user, gets this product for free is there has to be these sneaky backdoor relationships between the internet company and the actual for-profit business company. There's these backdoor deals going on between them. So the way he put it is like, people are being raised by being manipulated by relationships. So congratulations, you guys, you don't have to have parents that are fighting and manipulating you to choose sides for you to be manipulated at a young age now.
Oh.
So that's basically, I just had to give you that little background as far as like why like this whole entire thing happened in the first place. So as far as like trusting the feed, right? When we talk about trusting the feed, they know us so well. It's like a friend that says, hey, I know what's going to get my friend to get up off the couch and go hang out. But I also know when my friend's in a bad mood, what they're doing, that like they'll like this and they won't like these other things. So if you have a feed that's curated specifically to touch a nerve to get you a little angry and upset about something, and you're going to go deeper down that rabbit hole. Or if you have something that the algorithm knows that, wow, they show really interest in that, they're going to keep on feeding you that a lot more. Now, big controversy, I know, with a couple of celebrities, a couple big time comedians, when The Social Dilemma first came out, they did not like that The Social Dilemma movie was putting YouTube in the same category as Instagram and other social media platforms, because a couple of people said, YouTube just gives you more of what you want. And I think the example they use is cat videos. If you watch some cat videos, it's going to give you more cat videos. And that's completely harmless. Well, come to find out, it's not completely harmless. It's a mind, some kids call it doom scrolling.
Yeah,
right?
Doom scrolling.
It's a mind twist because simultaneously you're seeing all this utopia of, oh, these are all the things I like. And then you're seeing this dystopia of like, these are all the things I hate. And they just figure out how much hate, how much like you want. Maybe some old grandma, she's going to just be fed tons of like knitting, crocheting video because she'll just get lost in the sauce. She'll be so focused on that that they got her attention. It's called the attention economy. So why would you trust the feeds of these people? Because they know you better than you know yourself. People think it's their friend. I remember last night, and Brandon, I want to hear what you have to think about this. Last night, I was scrolling, watching videos, and for some reason, my YouTube, because I'm active on YouTube more than anything else, for some reason, my YouTube just kept on sending me political stuff over and over and over again. Well, why is that? This past week, getting close to the election, I started clicking more of like, hey, what's going on? Because I'm not really into politics. I mean, whether you're into it or not, you're going to see it now, especially if on YouTube. So for me, I'm like, just last night, I'm going, I started feeling like really gross and weird inside. I wasn't angry. I wasn't upset. I just felt like I was listening to videos. I was watching videos from people on the right. I was watching videos from people on the left. And I started to think, gosh, there's a lot of animosity and anger. And if I were to continue to watch those videos, it's going to affect my mood. Brandon, what do you think about that? Do you think that that trusting relationship that you have with the algorithms, that the way they cultivate it and the way they curate your feed kind of gets you sucked into believing you actually have a relationship with it because it reflects so much of you right back at you?
Yeah. So digest, just taking a second to kind of digest everything.
Yeah, I know
said.
I said a lot.
What I'm taking away from it, what would make sense, what I'm making sense of is the feed, because it's showing you what you want, or tying into your emotions if it's showing you negative things, just its whole goal is to hold your attention. And by holding your attention, that the brain is associating it being in a relationship. Because your definition, like the definition of relationships, because you've said that it's not just like if you're dating somebody, you have a relationship with your home, you have a relationship with yourself, you have a relationship with your friends, you have a relationship with your car. Relationship is just what's the definition you have for relationships?
It's a connection between any two people, places, objects, or ideas.
So taking that, the relationship, you do have a relationship with your social media and with that timeline, whatever that app is. And if I take it from the friend perspective, is, oh, this makes me feel good. This is a friend. This is here for me. So when it provides me information, it's only to benefit me because it makes me feel good. Because you trust what your friends have to say to you more than a stranger would, because you've spent time with them, they've made you feel good, and you have different moments you've shared with them. So that makes a lot of sense on why people would view it that way on their feed, is because it's like, oh, this thing makes me feel good. Why would it hurt me?
Well, or the opposite, depending on your personality, it can make you feel bad. Well, if you're a person that's more likely to be caught up in confrontation, more combative, that feeling bad, that's kind of like your home base. If you grew up in an abusive household, if you grew up with a lot of drama and that's just kind of what you're used to, that's how they stoke the fire. That's how they get you, because their sole purpose is to make sure you never log off.
So then, yeah, because if you grew up in chaos, if you're a child from chaos, when things get chaotic at school or work, people usually feel more calmed down or comfortable just because that's what they're used to. So then the social media is, whatever you're comfortable with will create that for you. And if you're comfortable with something, it's easy to provide you with information you're going to not question.
Yeah, I think everybody out there, they have a friend that just, they're like a moth to the flame when it comes to drama.
Ooh.
They just can't avoid it. And also too, human beings throughout, you know, history have really learned how to manipulate other human beings' emotions to distract from their own faults, their own failures, and their own mishaps. For example, I had a woman a long time ago, a client of mine, found out that there's a pattern. So her husband was like a construction worker or some sort of manual labor worker. And after the end of a long day, he would come home, be pissed off, in a bad mood. So what he'd typically do is he'd come in and he'd look around the house and see that things hadn't been cleaned, all the stuff that she was supposed to do. Well, this woman struggled with depression really bad. So she typically woke up late in the day, didn't get ready, didn't get her makeup on, do whatever until right before he got home from work. And so what she found out is that when he came home and she hadn't done any of those things, he would get mad at her. He'd complain to her, criticize her. She'd get defensive and get in fights. So as a survival technique to preserve her own sense of self and to hide her own issues with depression, when he'd come home, she'd greet him with, "Oh my gosh, I just got off the phone with the insurance company and they're going to screw us over for this and that and the other." She would find drama that had nothing to do with her and what she did. It could be drama about mutual family members, friends. It could be she had a bad conversation with the insurance company, the tax guy. She would told me, I would literally make up conversations of things that pissed him off also, just to distract him from seeing what I didn't do. Now, human beings have been doing that for a long time. And guess what? Human beings created technology and tech platforms. So it's not a surprise to me how they were able to figure out how to go back and forth between different types of emotions. Because if you only made someone feel good after a while, and that person's like, okay, I like that, but I like some controversy, I like some drama, then they're probably not going to be interested in the platform. So you have to figure out what the balance is to keep the person locked in so that they never get off.
That's crazy to think about. As you were saying that, the question I have is, what is it about the human brain? Because if we've been manipulating people for a while, like from the psychological perspective, why are people so addicted to drama? Or however you think it's best to answer this, what's the best way to get out of that loop of being addicted to drama?
Okay, so those are two different questions. Yes. Which one?
Go with the first one on like why people get addicted to drama, and then we can ask the question of...
Well, there's a lot of tons of research and lots of stuff that backs that up, because even in The Social Dilemma, they talked about that they did a study through Twitter. They found out that fake news travels, I think it was 6 times faster. I believe it's 6 times faster than real news. They did it just by posting fake stuff to kind of see what happened, which this was the old Twitter. So it sounds like that was probably happening, right? There might've been some interesting tests going on back in those days. And so when they figured out that, I don't think it really shocked or surprised anyone. I think we all know whenever our sense of self, or not our sense of self, whenever our life is being threatened, whenever our way of life is being threatened, it's going to trigger our limbic system. And our limbic system is that fight or flight system in our brain. And if we're in a fight or flight situation, all the other plans we had throughout the day, everything else that we're supposed to think about and do has to take a back seat. The drama takes a front seat, because drama could lead to potential disconnection in human beings. Disconnection in human beings can lead to not having support, not having resources for survival, and could lead to death. So because we're social creatures, so for example, I know in a lot of Native American tribes, because Native American tribes are really the only like hunter-gatherers that we could really do research on, because they were still present on this continent when the other people showed up. And so one of the things that, you know, just reading Native American research about their whole entire lives and stuff, is that you never want to be on the outside of the tribe. So if there is something in the inside of tribes, for example, if you had a woman in a tribe and she started to flirt with another man in the tribe, now this is like 150, 200 people in the tribe, so very close-knit tribe. What do you think could happen if that woman started flirting with the man, started having an affair with another woman's man inside a very close-knit community like that? Well, it was the responsibility of other people in the tribe to watch and pay attention to make sure that no one was doing something that was breaking their social contracts. Because if that one guy was cheating on the other, was cheating on with someone else's wife, if they get in a fight and one guy kills the other guy, what if the guy that was doing the cheating got killed because he found out by their other husband? But what if the guy that was doing the cheating was like the medicine man?
Yeah, you're losing an important figure in the
tribe.
You're
losing a very important person in the tribe. So gossip was their way of keeping everybody in line. Like, it was really more like keeping like tabs on everybody in case someone got out of line, that they get put back in line and they check them. And so a lot of times the women of the tribe that were not hunting, that were not going out and doing those types of dangerous things, they were staying in, they had to keep the balance and the order of it. So for their eyes and ears, be like, do, 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 like have this radar up for looking for any drama that could disrupt the tribe. they were drawn towards it and they were attracted towards it. Now I could go a lot deeper. I'm just giving you guys a small, like, little tidbit, because there's a lot more information behind that. But I think that answers the questions. Like, when people are addicted to drama, biologically, there's adrenaline.
Okay.
People can get addicted to adrenaline. So I've worked with a lot of young people that struggle with self-harm. It's not how they started. They weren't like cutting themselves and then saying, oh, this feels good. But when you cut yourself and you look at the pain and the blood, or not the pain, but you look at the blood and stuff, your brain's like, I'm in so much pain inside that this doesn't even bother. I'm doing this intentionally. But if someone swung a knife, like tried to stab you with a knife, you're not going to sit there and go, just cut me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to jump out of the way because it's a survival thing. So we avoid hurt and pain through survival. But if we inflict hurt and pain upon ourselves, that hurt and pain creates adrenaline, because adrenaline is a painkiller too. I mean, everybody's ever had an adrenaline rush. Oh, like you see people in boxing or fighting sports, like, ah, their adrenaline's going. If they didn't have adrenaline going, they'd be scared to death. They'd be like, ow, that punched hurt. Okay, I quit. I don't care how much money you're paying me. So adrenaline serves that purpose. And getting back to the whole entire gossiping stuff, it's something that's combative. It's something that can be like interesting. It can create adrenaline. And interesting enough, it's a way that people can connect.
Hmm.
So if you're on a party and you're in, a lot of people have talked recently about tribalism. When I say recently, like maybe the past 10 years. We're tribal people. So when they say tribalism, we're used to having our own group, and you agree with your group. You agree with your team. That's why if you've ever gone to a football game, a basketball game of like college or pro sports, there could be fights. There could be confrontations. It brings out that like it's you against them, and it's our team. We're all wearing the same colors and we're all cheering for the same people. So that tribalism creates a lot of adrenaline, creates even dopamine, and they're getting, they create oxytocin when they're all cheering for the same team. They connect with each other. And so when you are pissed off together, that builds bonds and relationships. So if a couple women in a tribe both hate the same woman in the tribe, was that saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
So now you're like, we're going to get closer because we both hate the same people. So it actually forms relationships. And in a small way, I remember I did a podcast on this a long time ago. Someone made a comment, they got pissed off. They're like, I think you're promoting drama, because I'd said that drama and gossiping actually creates connections. I didn't say it was a good way to create connections, but how many times you guys listen to this have thought like, man, that guy's such a punk. And then your friend's like, yeah, that's such a punk. Like, yeah, what's your name? Well, yeah, let's be friends. Now, he wasn't your friend, but like, because you both hated the same teacher, or because you both hated the same coach, you now have a bond that creates your own little tribe. And then other people, they don't like them. So now put that on social media with hundreds of thousands of millions of people. The fever pitch, it gets so intense where if it was like four or five people, you might talk trash behind someone's back. You might like, not like that person. But it usually wouldn't end up in World War III.
That's fair. So, question.
Again, I said a lot, yes. But...
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'm hanging in there, allegedly, we hope.
I'm just more worried about our listeners, because I go through deep dives sometimes and they go, wait, I had to rewind that three or four times. It made sense, but I didn't really think about it. I'm not trying to act like I got the biggest brain in the room, because that definitely isn't the case. So I'm trying to use as many simple words, because I'm a simple man.
On relationships and kind of taking it a step back from drama leads to connection, I think what you've said is you can really form relationships with people when you have a mutual goal. And when I say mutual goal is, if I don't like this person, I want people on my side in case there's ever a combative stuff.
Absolutely.
This is like at the bare level human
mutual
instinct.
Mutual goal, mutual struggle,
yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, even if it's like the mutual benefit or the mutual relationship I have with my car wants to drive and I need to get somewhere and use it. Like there's always kind of that symbiosis going on. So what would you say then? Because it can be, if you're using drama to connect, it can lead to a bad relationship or can lead to a bad connection.
Yes.
What should people look for to check their motivations when it's, you're hardwired of, I want to have people to complete a goal with? How would you give people, like what tools would you give people to be like, is this a good connection, or am I getting too far into the weeds of it being a dramatic or not the best foundation for a relationship with someone? Or even if it's social media or their timeline, like how do you slow down and ask the question if it's good for you?
Okay, now put that all in one sentence. Because I think I know what you're saying, but I want you to kind of whittle it down to like just one simple sentence. or statement.
What would you tell people that they can do to help slow down and realize if the relationships are dramatic or not? Are they getting into it for being dramatic?
So I'm going to infer that you're saying a person is tired of being in dramatic relationships.
Yes, yes, and wants out.
And they're seeing that maybe they had a past, a history where that was their habit. Like,
yep.
Like, why do I keep on dating people that hurt my feelings and people that treat me like crap? Well, maybe that's all you know. Maybe that's, you were raised, that was the language of love. If I love you, I'm going to treat you like crap because that's how your parents or your siblings treated you. Right? So if someone's trying to get out of dramatic relationships, you got to make your own tribe. That's what I tell people. That's so hard because when you got history with people, when you got, you know, when you've been dating someone for a year, even married someone for 10 years, and granted, I'm a marriage and family therapist. So I'm always talking to people. It's like, I've been in this relationship for a long time. They'll give me 100 reasons why it hurts them. It's horrible for them. And they say, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. Okay, great. I give suggestions for them to change it. And they say, but I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't because I got this or I'm broke. And then they start justifying all the reasons why they have to stay in the relationship that is horrible for them. And they've given me a great case of why they should get out of it, but they just won't get out of it. Sometimes it takes people more time, more pain. They got to sit and they just got to be in it longer for them to realize that there's only one way out. And that means you got to create new relationships. You got to create a different tribe. You got to date someone else. Or if it's a friend group, you're going to have to go out and start all over. But because people are more familiar with the known and scared of the unknown, too often people tell me, they don't say these words as my saying, but they say things like, I'd rather just stay in my very uncomfortable comfort zone. Because at least I know the crap that I'm going to get from this relationship. I know the struggle. And if I just stay focused on trying to fix a problem that I don't have the ability to fix, it's like a hobby that distracts you from your real work. It's like, hey, I've got a 9-to-5 job, but I really want to be an artist. Well, being an artist doesn't make you any money. Well, if you just did art all day long and didn't go to your job, you're going to be a struggling artist, poor and broke, right?
Right.
So it's easy for people to be like, it's too hard to step out into the unknown because I may have more problems, more issues. Let me just try to stay here and figure out the issues that I currently have. So now that I've said that, if a person is ready and they're like, okay, you know, I've been talking to them for a while, or maybe they've been talking to their friends for a while and they're starting to make personal life changes. Well, one thing that helps the most to help start a new tribe is you have to do new things. So whatever you're comfortable with, you have to do things you're uncomfortable with. If you have, I know Brandon and I were talking before the podcast, we're saying the reason why the TV show was such a huge hit of Friends. Now, even the younger kids know what Friends is because of Netflix and all the t-shirts and stuff that. The reason why that was such a big hit because it was so relatable because so often you put like 4 or 5 guys and girls in a group together and all they do is just take turns dating the same person. They fight with the same people. They have drama. And then the next weekend they go, oh, we're going to hang out again. Then they hang out again. They get drunk, or even if they don't drink, they're just like, well, she said this, well, he said that. And then they go, hi. And then they're totally fake in front of each other, but they keep on staying in the same circle of friends in the same groups, even though they're not happy. And the question is always this, what you're asking, why would someone do that? We're creatures of habit. We have patterns that unless we acknowledge what the pattern is, face it for what it is, and replace it with something totally different, not only will we not get out of that relationship, we will stop our own personal development and growth. I am so confident in what I'm saying that I'm telling you guys that if you spend a lot of time on any social media app for any particular reason, it will stunt your mental and emotional growth. Now, if you're older, you're not growing as much anymore, but it could get you caught in like little silos where you just stay the same. Younger people, they make changes faster, but if they get in the wrong group of friends, they're going to stop their own autonomy, meaning their own sense of self, developing their own sense of self, and they're just going to have to bend the knee and do whatever the group wants them to do. Now, in any social group, you're going to have to conform to some degree. You're going to have to, you know, use the acronyms that your job uses. You're going to have to kind of go along with the system, whatever. Yeah. But outside of that, you can still have different relationships. You can have different hobbies. So I'm always telling people, find things that make you feel uncomfortable. Work on those as an individual person, specifically things that help you with your mental, emotional, and social well-being. And then create a new tribe. Reach out to people that you were always interested in or you thought there's a good connection there, but maybe they weren't as popular. Maybe they didn't have as nice of a car. They weren't as rich. And so because they didn't have those exterior things, you thought, gosh, I need to try to hang out with the A-plus type of social friends. I need to hang out with the friends that have more clout, that have something going for them, so I can rub shoulders with really important people. And by the way, this is a very common thing.
Yeah.
Teenagers and adults, not everybody, lots of people get sucked into the, oh my gosh, I can be amazing by association if I hang out with these people. Well, to all of those people that are tired of that, tired of trying to conform and change who you are and stop your own development just to meet the needs of the group, you're going to have to develop your own tribe. That means you should reach out to people who've just been steady, salt of the earth, good people. They may be a little bit boring. They may not have all the drama that you're addicted to or used to, but you know what they're going to be? Exactly who you always known them to be. They're not going to be up and down all over the place. They're just pretty consistent people. And like I said, even though those people may be boring, they're most likely not going to cause a lot of chaos in your life.
First thing I think about on that, I think ties into so many other things. So we're talking about like social media use, getting out of drama, why people are addicted to drama. When you're cutting back on any of those things or changing anything, you brought up the word boring. From the like, as the therapist, the mental health side of things, and just through how we've evolved so quickly, what are the benefits of just being bored?
Being bored, much like one of our last podcasts, where we talked about the loneliness epidemic. And I said, when you feel a sense of loneliness, it's weighing on you for a long time, it's really a notification trying to tell you that whatever you've been doing in your normal life, your normal patterns, it's time to change. It's an invitation. It's a call to action. Boring is exactly the same thing. You know who wasn't bored? And I tell this all, and you know this because you've come to the classes in the high school. I tell all the teens because they'll all tell me, I'll usually bring up boring like, hey, you know, what caused you guys to be bored? Now, when you ask a teenager, hey, what caused you to be bored? That's a mind twist for them. I did that recently and they're like, well, not having anything to do. I'm like, no, I mean, what causes you to be bored? Like, what causes the feeling? So let's say you don't have anything to do. Well, why don't you just go do something then? Well, because I guess our mind, like we just think about all the things around us. There's not nothing that seems exciting. There's not food that we want to eat or this and that. And so we just get bored. I go, okay, so when you get bored, what do? Just get on my phone. I don't know, just do something, just kind of take up time or take up, you know, like a little space in my mind just so I'm not bored anymore. I go, but does that prevent the boredom or does that just delay it?
Or mask it.
Yeah. And at this point, they start like looking up in the air and going, wait, huh, what? Like they've never really thought about that way. And then I conclude with telling them this. I go, from now on, I want you to look at boredom as an invitation. I know who's not bored. 500 years ago, I always use the example of the Ute tribe here in Utah because, you know, it's named after the state's named after the Ute tribe. And I've met a lot of people in the Ute tribe. And one thing the people that I've talked to and I asked them, and we joke around about this, I said, hey, do you think 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, there was 15-year-old native Ute kids waking up at noon saying, Mom, I want my blueberry pie and my moccasins now, now, Mom, now. And they all laugh and they say, well, of course not. I go, what was life like for those kids? And a couple of people I talked to, they said, man, they're up at the crack of dawn. They're getting water, fishing, picking berries, and they were going boom, 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 boom. I'm like, do you think those kids were bored? And all the elders I've talked to, they go, oh no. I asked my Polynesian family and the elders of, you know, the people that I know in the Samoan culture, I asked them the same thing. Were Samoan kids bored when it was tribal and when it was like on the island, there's no white man, there's no nothing, just their own. They're like, no, they didn't sleep in. They weren't bored. They always had something to do because they had to do this thing called survive.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to survive for them, when they had time to rest and relax, that was not boredom. That was recharging. That was, okay, I got to recharge. I got to unload all my energy doing tasks and stuff to keep survival up. And then I got to recharge and then I got to unload my energy again. That's why art, dance, and culture is so important to a community. Because those are the things where you get to do those things and it's not labor, but it's really a labor of love because it's what everybody needs. Every culture had some sort of dance to express their feelings and emotions. Every culture had storytelling about their history. Every culture came up with songs to sing and activities and games to play, challenges that they'd challenge each other to get ready for war. That's what football comes from, right? Football is a war game. Same thing with the Native Americans with lacrosse, right? Like, these are all games that they're bonding and keeping each other active and moving, because boredom meant death. Much like loneliness, if you're bored and if you're lonely, then your brain's saying, hey, man, or woman, or whatever. It's like saying, hey, this is not really good when you're not into something, when you're not locked in on something, when you're not engaged in something, because you're not offering anything to the tribe. So boredom was supposed to be like, if you're bored, that was like, oh crap, like I better do something, because if I don't get better at shooting that bow, we may not eat.
Yeah. Makes sense. That may be another podcast topic, but with society built the way that it is, that there is way more opportunities for boredom, with so many things trying to distract us. And I think the boredom thing, because I have questions of what's the difference between boredom and needing to recharge, and when things are at a standstill, like you're in a good position in life and there's not chaos going on, if you came from a chaotic background, like just knowing the different feelings and levels about that, I think that'd be an interesting thing to dive into another time.
Boredom creates nervousness, worry, anxiety. Boredom is troublesome. If you ever ask, if a teenager, listen to a teenager when they say, I'm bored, look at their body language. Is that a, I'm so bored?
Right.
They're like, I'm so bored. It feels like distress. It feels painful. It feels like, And that's why I tell them it's an invitation. So that's a feeling of boredom. The feeling of recharging is like, I finally finished my task. I finished my job. I've earned my rest. And it feels like an accomplishment. Complete opposite. It's like peace and anxiety. It's like oil and water. They don't mix. They definitely do not mix. You can't be like, oh, I'm so nervous and scared, but yet I feel so calm and relaxed. Right? No one says, I'm so bored, but yet I feel so inspired.
Touche.
So that's a big difference between the two. Boredom is troublesome and it's nerve-wracking. It feels like slight irritating. Or recharging is like, I finally made it. I got more stuff to do. Let me rest, because I earned it.
Nice. I like it.
So I think we hit our mark with that today. Definitely took a deep exploration into social media. It's nothing new. It's just like the Transformers version.
Which is exaggerated.
It's exaggerated. And when I say Transformers, if you guys ever seen Transformers, the movies, whatever, it's like they're very human, but they're robotic.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have all these different goals or whatever. So it's an advanced technological version of our normal human problems, just on steroids. And we're screwed.
Oh, cool.
Just in case you guys didn't know this when you're listening to this on the podcast, we are so screwed unless we figure out how to keep connected to our ancestral roots. Technology, great, pulling us away from our soul, our vibe, our connection with other people, not great. That's why here on this podcast, it's why everything we talk about, everything I talk about, everything that I'm involved in, I eat, sleep, and breathe, two words, social health. You have better social health, you're not going to be as bored as much, you're not going to be as lonely as much, you're not going to have as many mental health problems, or if you do have mental health problems, they're definitely a lot more manageable. If you have better social health, you'll probably be employed, you'll probably have a roof over your head, and you'll have meaningful relationships that will sustain you until you get through your difficult times, you can get back on your own feet. Well, you guys, until next time, thank you guys for visiting us here at OG Therapy. And as always, you can follow me on Instagram at David_KOZLOWSKI. You can follow us at OG.therapy on Instagram as well. On YouTube and on TikTok, look for OG Therapy. You'll find us there also. And until next time, be cool. Bye.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at chumbacasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.